Okay, Mrs. Null, please take note. They just notified in Hebrew that the space on the recording is getting full. I guess we'll be in touch about that. Yashar koyach. Okay. So yes, we've been explaining why the internally driven system of Avodas Hashem is a higher level, and Chovas HaLevavos is telling us that it's because there is no limit to the number of mitzvahs that it will generate. So now he's telling us, how does that work? Every day, a person who's living in the Chovas HaLevavos' world, and this is something very, very high, perhaps, in terms of somebody who I've actually seen living this way, would be Rabbi Avigdor Miller, who made this mamash his life's focus. But every day, a person is living alert and looking to see all the chasadim that Hashem is doing with him, and his mind is constantly generating new understanding. It's prolific. And every day, his appreciation of Hashem grows more and more. His appreciation of Hashem grows more and more. And therefore, the kol asher toisif hakorosoi, the more he understands, v'yavin toivoi kim v'oitzem yichol toyumalchusoi, and he appreciates the kindnesses of Hashem and his immense ability and his kingship, his greatness. So yosif likonaloi lishofelafanov. So the dynamic between him and Hashem is constantly developing. He feels more and more submissive toward Hashem. I'm still not going to elaborate. I want to move through the whole paragraph and then explain the immensity of what the Chovas HaLevavos is telling us here. And therefore he says, you see that David is constantly mischanin el elikim. He's pleading Hashem leho'iro yisay aleihem ulasir mosach hasichlus me'al einov. He's pleading Hashem to inspire him further, meaning his life was a life of gaining more insight, of deepening his appreciation. A day where his appreciation of Hashem stayed the same as it was yesterday, for him was a failure. We're talking about mind-boggling levels here. But every day he expected to get further in his understanding of Hashem, in his appreciation of Hashem, sense of indebtedness to Hashem. And he would constantly daven to Hashem, you showed me this stage, please show me the next stage. Please let me get deeper in my appreciation of you. Okay, and then what? It says, this is what he means when he says in the pasuk, Gal einai v'abitam niflois miterasecha, please open my eyes so I can see the wonders of your Torah. Etc. Now, he then moves on and says, it toward the end of the paragraph, it's been said about some of the tzaddikim. I just want to say that when the Chovas HaLevavos uses the word parush, we would use the word tzaddik. In his lexicon, he uses the word parush for tzaddik. It says about some of the tzaddikim, kol yameim b'tshuva. All their days they were busy doing tshuva. Why? Mipnei shehayu mechadshim b'kol yom tshuva. You know what? Instead of reading this inside, I'm going to speak it out outside. He's saying that they had the great people of old. Every day were doing tshuva. They felt that yesterday they had failed in their relationship with Hashem. What does that mean? It has to be taken in proper perspective. On the contrary, this gives a very refreshing perspective on the concept of tshuva in general. But it means like this. I'll tell a story to bring out the effect. There was a young man who was becoming a Baal tshuva some 40 years ago in the United States. And as he's growing and as he's learning and as, you know, in all the different settings that he was doing his learning and his growth, etc., he kept on hearing the name from all different angles, Reb Moshe Feinstein, when it came to matters of halacha, when it came to matters of hashkafa. Reb Moshe Feinstein was being quoted left and right. And he started understanding that this is a legendary figure, But what was novel about it was that this is a legendary figure who's actually contemporary. He's actually alive. So he decided that he wants to actually try to get to go see Reb Moshe Feinstein. So he knew he has yeshiva in Manhattan, in Teferis Yerushalayim. So he came there for Shachris. It's a big base medrash, a lot of people milling around, people coming and going, people of all kinds of ages and looks, etc. There were also people going around collecting money, like, you know, a nice, big, active base medrash with all of its different components. Okay. He sets himself up in some, you know, off to the side, starts putting on his phone, getting ready to daven, and a short old man comes over to him and extends his hand. So he took out a quarter and handed it to him. And the man gave him a nice smile and said, thank you very much, and moved on. Okay. After davening, he goes over to somebody who wants to know who Reb Moshe Feinstein is, and they point to a short old man sitting up at the Mizrach. He said, whoa, that's the man who I just gave a quarter to. He was mortified. He understood what had happened. Reb Moshe Feinstein had come over to give him Shalom Aleichem. He saw a stranger in the Beis Medrash. She had come to give him Shalom Aleichem. So he thought he was coming to, he was asking for a donation. So they gave him a quarter. And Reb Moshe, in order not to embarrass him, just graciously accepted the quarter, thanked him for it, and moved on. This person was mortified. Mamish mortified. Now, had he done anything wrong? He didn't do anything wrong. But he just realized that he had just had a very embarrassing encounter with the Gadol HaDor. He had no idea who he was dealing with. He didn't do anything wrong, but this was very embarrassing to him. So I'm going to move on to the mashal that the Chavetz Chavavis gives, and then we'll get to our point. The Chavetz Chavavis says that it was said about some of the tzaddikim that they were constantly doing tshuva for not having a proper appreciation of who Hashem was yesterday. And therefore, today, they felt embarrassed about the way they related to Hashem yesterday. If I would know, if I would appreciate everything that I do today, I feel mortified that I only related to Hashem yesterday in the way that I appreciated yesterday. And this is actually, he's actually referring to a Maaseh Shehaya. This is a true story that happened before the time of the Chovetz Chavavis with Reb Sadia Gaon. Reb Sadia Gaon, this was a common thing that was done by many of the great people of yesteryear. They would go on self-imposed exiles. For whatever purposes, spiritual exercises of different types, they would go on self-imposed exiles when they would travel incognito. They would travel, you know, different places, cities, whatever, anonymously, and for whatever their purposes were. So, Reb Sadia Gaon was world famous. But let's remember that there were no cameras then. His rulings, his responsa, his writings were disseminated all around the Jewish world. Reb Sadia Gaon was the leader of the Jewish world. But people didn't necessarily know what they looked like unless they had actually been to his hometown. No pictures. So he was able, as a world-famous figure, to travel anonymously. He could move from town to town without anybody knowing who he is. And you could surmise that if he actually walked into a Beis Medrash, he'd probably hear himself quoted. So he is doing his travels, and he came to a town, came to the Jewish inn in the town, and the innkeeper was a very pleasant person. He would receive every guest very graciously. And said he received Reb Sadia Gaon as he would receive any other guest. Welcomed him in, set him up comfortably. Okay, now, I suppose Reb Sadia Gaon sat down to eat or something. Another traveler passed by, and this was a merchant who was actually from Reb Sadia Gaon's area. The merchant walks into the inn, and he sees the famed Reb Sadia Gaon sitting at the table with the other guests, and he was like, whoa, do you know who that is? That's Reb Sadia Gaon. And immediately, you know, there was an eruption and you know, the word spread and people came and started, you know, flocking around the hotel. People wanted to get his blessing. People wanted to ask him a question. People wanted to just see him. It was a whole hullabaloo that went on for hours until very, very late at night, it started dying down. And the innkeeper, when all this finally subsided, the innkeeper came over to Reb Sadie Gaon, feeling very embarrassed, feeling very mortified, and he said, "I apologize." So Reb Sadie Gaon said, "What do you apologize for?" He said, "I apologize for the way I related to you. Well, you treated me very nicely." They said, "Yeah, I treated you nicely. I treat all my guests nicely. But had I known who you were, had I known that you were the Gadol HaDor, it would have been a whole different story." That was what happened. Reb Sadie Gaon came home, and he related this story to his talmidim, to his family, whatever it is, and he was perturbed. He was. They saw there was something on his mind about it, and he said, "This really is the dynamic with Hashem. This really is the dynamic with Hashem, in the way that we just described. According to my understanding, according to my current appreciation of Hashem, I'm embarrassed of the way I related to him yesterday." In other words, a person is constantly growing. A person's sensitivities are constantly growing. And therefore, there will be more and more nuances in his life that he will take upon himself. Here it's already not in the realm of the 613 mitzvahs that we were discussing. The other week. It's not in the realm of the 613 mitzvahs, but once he feels like he's interacting with Hashem, so suddenly it doesn't seem proper to stand like this. It doesn't seem proper to sit like that. Many different sensitivities will start making their way into the way he runs his life. And these are not requirements. But what are they? This is what the Chovas HaLevavos is referring to when he says that once a person moves onto the track of an internal drive, then there's no limit to the mitzvahs, meaning a person will constantly be enhancing his performance and adding different bits and pieces to the way he runs his life because of his ever-growing awe and sense of submission to Hashem. Just to give a couple of possible examples, this is really the whole sugya of chassidus, of doing things that are beyond the letter of the law. The way these things should work is that they come from a place, not that, I'm going to force myself to do it because I want to be extra pious, but on the contrary, they come from a place of, from an internal place, I feel driven to do more. I've reached a point now where I feel that XYZ isn't appropriate. Like, let's say, for example, a person who is, every day he says Kriya Shema Al Hamita. I don't want to get into examples that we should wonder if they are halachically. A person benches every day, and now he suddenly starts learning more about Birkas HaMazon. He starts learning more about Birkas HaMazon, about its importance, etc. Now he feels like he wants to put on a jacket for Birkas HaMazon. Wants to put on a jacket, a hat for Birkas HaMazon. Now this is actually something that's recommended in halacha, but I'm setting that aside for the moment. I'm using this as an example of something that a person might suddenly might start feeling like, wow, now that I appreciate what I'm actually doing, I want to step it up. I want to make a point of tucking myself in. I want to make a point of putting on a jacket. These are symptoms of his added sensitivities. And this is what the Chovas HaLevavos is referring to. To go further, if we'll just give some more extreme examples, right? Reb Moshe Feinstein, there are two of the giants of the last few decades, two of the most outstanding names in our Torah greats in the last 50, 60 years, are Reb Moshe Feinstein and the Chazon Ish. And interestingly, these two people are not known as Talmidim of a particular Rebbe, meaning they have many of the other Gedolim who are known as a Talmud of this one, a Talmud of that one, right? There's a Talmud of Slabodka, a Talmud of Mir, the Rabbi Ruchem Lavovitz. These two are not associated with a particular Rebbe. In a way, one gets the impression that they're kind of like self-made men. They weren't known as being a Talmud of anyone particular. But the truth is that if you read about either of their lives, you get a picture of a towering father who, interestingly, it was the son who became the luminary, the famous luminary. But you start reading about the father and you say, wow, how is it that I never heard of him before? Reading about Rav Moshe Feinstein's father is just like, it's not even inspiring. It's not even inspiring because it's just beyond. Reading about Rav Moshe Feinstein is inspiring. Reading about his father is just like beyond. So just among the things that are said about his father, he could not learn sitting down. What do I mean he could not learn sitting down? He felt it, not that he held it was inappropriate, but that he could not bring himself to sit while he's learning. He's engaging with the live word of Hashem. He couldn't sit. Now, I'll make a point of noting that, you know what, in earlier times, way back when, until some point in the time of the Amoraim, of the Tannaim, people did not sit while they learned. People were engaging in the live word of Hashem. When a person sits down to learn Torah, the Sfarim tell us that the Shekhinah is actually there feeding it to him. It's not that he is absorbing information from a book. The Shekhinah is actually there feeding it to him. And there's a lot to be said about that, but that's not our subject right now. But, therefore, in earlier times, everybody stood while they learned. There was no such thing as sitting while you learned. How can you sit while you're learning? It says that in the time of Rabbi Gamliel, it reached a point where people were just getting weaker. And if they were going to maintain that practice, then people just wouldn't be able to learn. It's certainly better to learn than to not learn because you can't stand for so long. And therefore, we all sit while we're learning. But Reb David Feinstein, everybody knows that Reb David Feinstein is Reb Moshe Feinstein's world-famous contemporary son. But Reb David Feinstein was also his father. I guess the current Reb David is named after his grandfather. He personally, as his own personal practice, he didn't sit while he learned. He couldn't. This is another example. This is a far-out example. But it's just to illustrate the concept of that a person starts feeling more obligations, not coming from a place of obsessiveness, but just coming from a place of appreciation of what he's dealing with. And many more feelings, practices, etc., start moving into his consciousness. I remember when I spent some time really delving into the significance of the various aspects of the Shabbos Suda, and really, really learning up what's going on at the Shabbos Suda, the immense kedusha of the Shabbos Suda, etc. Since then, I feel like I should be wearing a jacket at the Shabbos Suda. A hat, all right. I know people will also sit with a hat the whole Shabbos Suda. I'm not there yet. I can't sit with a hat the whole Shabbos Suda. But a jacket I do. That's a small example. But it's bringing out this concept of, and this will be very relevant in Bein Adam L'Chaverei also, right? The more your love for a person deepens, the more your appreciation for a person deepens, the more you're going to go out of your way to do extra things for them. And this is what the Chavos HaVavos is referring to when he says you move into a realm of sensitivity, of appreciation, where you are just on your own coming up with different things that you want to be doing in order to show your love, in order to express your awe, your appreciation for Hashem. Okay. So that is the Chavos HaLevavos' point here. When a person moves into the realm of the internally driven system, it's already not about 613 mitzvahs. The 613 mitzvahs are the basis, but it's going to go from there. It's going to go from there to all kinds of other additional enhancements that are coming from a place of these refined sensitivities. This is going to be very, very much what's behind the concept that we call Hidur Mitzvah. right? Where a person is supposed to beautify the mitzvahs that he does. In terms of the externally imposed program, Hashem gave you a set of mitzvahs and just do them right. So you don't need to make the mitzvah beautiful. What does making the mitzvah beautiful come in? Like, for example, right? Like the Gemara says, you have tzitzis, make them beautiful. Don't let it be a piece of patchwork. The Shabbos candles should be lit with an oil. You should have nice candlesticks, and they should be lit with an oil that provides a nice light, not a jumpy, sparky light, etc. All this comes from a place of appreciating the grandeur of interacting with Hashem. And therefore, the examples will go on and on. Chazal guided us in a lot of these things in many ways. Many of these things are actually proper halachas nowadays. Just to give an example, another example. Moshe Feinstein said that, you know, there are two approaches, both are in halacha, as to what's better when you're davening. Should you shake? Should you sway? Or should you just stand stock still? And the answer is that whichever you do is reflecting a different value in halacha. Both are recommended. One, the swaying, the shuckling idea, is an expression of kol atzmoy say toimana. All my limbs express Hashem's greatness. I want my entire body to be involved in my davening, in my praising of Hashem. The other approach of just standing stock still, which is actually more difficult, is an expression of the awe, an appreciation of the fact that I'm standing in the presence of Hashem. So it's both approaching, you know, dedication to Hashem, but from different angles. It's very common that you'll have this like opposite angles of expressing the same thing. But whatever the case is, Rav Moshe Feinstein related that he used to be a shuckler. He used to sway when he davened. But then there was one time when he was summoned to the communist commissar, whatever it was. This was a person who mamish held life and death in his hands, and he could decide, with a flick of his fingers, that somebody should be killed. And Rav Moshe Feinstein was taken to him for a tough interrogation. And Rav Moshe Feinstein said that he remembered then just the sense of what it meant to be standing in awe with the realization that you are mamish standing before somebody who can decide your fate. So he said he stood stock still. He stood unable to move. And he said since then, it like enhanced my appreciation for what it means to be standing and davening, and since then he would stand stock still. So this is just another example of more mitzvahs that move into a person's life just as a result of his own sensitivities. I'll just give another example how it can mamish come in opposite directions. It's interesting. The Mesilas Yesharim goes on about various different extra special practices that the Chachamim of old had due to these sensitivities. So another example of how things can be approached from opposite angles heading for the same place. There was one of the Chachamim from the Gemara who was a very rich man. And the Gemara gives a few examples of like very rich and prestigious people who had plenty of servants in their homes. They did not have to be involved in running the house in any way. Yet, on Erev Shabbos, they would make a point of getting involved in the menial preparations for Shabbos. So, you know, you had Rav Nachman, who was like one of the prestigious leaders of the Torah community at that time, who would be chopping wood. They would make a point, davka, of doing things that were below their dignity in order to express that right now, the Shabbos clean that's coming just trumps any issues of dignity, etc. This is my dignity. That's how it's expressed in Halach, in the Mishnah Berurah. This is my dignity. The fact that I have the opportunity to be associated with the Shabbos Queen, I want everybody to see that I'm, you know, it's like, I remember somebody, there was somebody in my shul when I was growing up. We had a special Taoist. He only wore it on special occasions. Why? Because this Taoist, he said he was once at a bris. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was there. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky was the Sandik, and he hadn't brought his own talis along. So when he was ready to actually go up, he just turned around and said, does anybody have a talis I can use? So this fellow was closest to him. He quickly stuck out his talis, and Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky wore it for the bris. So since then, he was all proud, and since then he put this talis away. He only wore it on special occasions. But what's the idea here? The idea here is that, you know, he did Rabbi Yaakov a favor, but nevertheless, it was such a privilege for him to have been involved with Rabbi Yaakov. Right? Rabbi Yaakov needed something, and he was the person who was there to give it to him. So this was the sense of these chachamim when they were getting ready for Shabbos. You're talking about my dignity now? Look, people see that I'm involved with the Shabbos queen. What could be more dignified than that? And therefore, yeah, they would chop wood and do other such activities. So it says that there was one very, very great chacham, a very rich chacham. We had a special ivory bench. An ivory bench is something very, very expensive. And he would prepare the fire. He would prepare the fire, which is a menial, dirty job, to prepare, you know, to make a fire out of logs and stuff. He had a special ivory bench that he used for that. Meaning, right now I am engaged in something very prestigious right now in being busy with the coals and the logs and trying to get the fire going. And he had a special ivory bench that he used special for that. There were other Amoraim who mamish took the opposite approach. They would wear cheap work clothes, gunde. It's like imagine a person getting into cheap, dirty work clothes. You'd feel very funny if you came to the house of the God Ladar and saw him wearing dirty work clothes. But he would dafka do this on Friday afternoon in order to once again show his deference for the Shabbos queen. Right now, I'm in menial, dirty, cheap work clothes. So there's kind of opposite approaches, but all coming to the same place. It came from a sense of the privilege of being involved with Hashem in this way, of preparing for the Shabbos queen. One person it drove to dafka use dirty wood clothes, the other person it drove to have a special ivory bench dedicated for that. But it's all the same point, that once a person starts moving into these extra sensitivities, he will naturally find himself gravitating toward various extra practices that are not a result of, hey, yeah, I want to be extra pious, so I'm going to do this. But on the contrary, it's like we keep saying, it's internally driven. It's internally driven. So that is point number five of the Chavis Halvavos. So we're making our way through pretty slowly, but nobody's in a rush. That's point number five of the Chavis Halvavos, of where the internal drive rises above, brings a person to a higher place than the externally imposed system. Okay. Vashishi. Now we move on to the next reason of why this is to be considered a higher zone. A higher zone. The sixth and the seventh already bring us to a little bit of a different realm. So he says, Gavoidashi mina Torah, to keep the Torah, to keep the 613 mitzvahs, the mitzvahs that were handed to us, it is within a person's ability. Meaning, you know, it's clear cut. You know, you have to do it. It's a lot, but it is doable. If you apply yourself, you can do it. If a person decides he really wants to do it, he can do it. We all do it, right? But when it comes to the internally driven avodah, it requires very great efforts on the part of the person, and it also requires divine assistance. Why? A person naturally does not have the ability to attain it. David, and therefore you see David constantly, meishiv tamid hatchina lokel, he's constantly pleading of Hashem la'azrei aleh, to help him with it. Va'ashrei tmimei derech. In chapter 119 of Tehillim, Ashrei Tmimei Derech. Ashrei Tmimei Derech, chapter 119 of Tehillim, is very famously the longest parak of Tehillim. It has the psukim of all the Aleph Beis 8 times. Right? We all know this from when we say Tehillim for a Yortzeit or whatever it is. It has each letter of the Aleph Beis, 8 psukim of Aleph, 8 psukim of Beis, etc. This is a magnificent perek. It's long, but it's a magnificent perek in terms of describing the inner feelings of a person who's in love with Hashem. In describing what his aspirations look like. It's a very, very inspiring perek. And the Chavos Halevavos tells us that you see a recurring point in that perek is David HaMelech's pleas to Hashem to help him with it. So what's the Chavos Halevavos telling us? He's telling us something interesting. He's telling us that the in order to really move ahead in this realm, first of all, you need a lot of effort. Effort that goes beyond the efforts that you need in order to keep the mitzvahs. So I want to stress something that Rabbi Avigdor Miller would stress. He said this both with regard to Chavos Halevavos and with regard to Mesillas Yesharim and plenty of other Musa Sfarim, but particularly with regard to Chavos Halevavos and Mesillas Yesharim. What characterizes Chavos Halevavos and Mesillas Yesharim basically have become recognized as the staples of Musar Sfarim. We can go on and on to demonstrate that. I'm not going to do that right now. But what characterizes them? What distinguishes them from the general sphere of Musar Sfarim? An answer, I won't say the answer, but an answer is that every Musar Sefer has its method of inspiration, it has its what it's trying to achieve, where it's trying to get you. But the common denominator between Chavos Halevavos and Mesillas Yesharim is that it is actually a guide to service of Hashem from A to Z. It's not just inspiration, but it's a program. It's a program of Avodas Hashem from A to Z. You take either one of these Sfarim, you should learn both, but you take either one of these Sfarim and you have your program for life laid out for you. And to take it one step further, there is nobody, this is what's so unique about these two Sfarim, there's nobody for whom it's beyond them, meaning whatever level you're at, you can begin connecting to what the Mesillas Yesharim or the Chavos Halevavos are exhorting, whatever level you're at. And on the other hand, nobody graduates from it. They both provide a system that you can be busy with your entire life. You never reach the point of having graduated from it. So therefore, the Chavos Halevavos here is telling us something interesting. He's telling us that you reach a place where you have to start leaning on divine assistance, and Hashem provides it. He already told us that earlier. And when a person really does his all to apply himself to the 613 mitzvahs, to the regimen of Torah and mitzvahs that we know, a person does his all with sincerity, with dedication. He really wants to go as far as he can with it. He will find himself starting to gain insight, starting to gain sensitivities. And this, the Chavos Halevavos sees as a process of Hashem actually intervening, moving himself onto the picture. You gave it your effort. You did yours. And now Hashem is starting to move in and start move you further along. So on the one hand, the Chavos Halevavos is telling us that it's really beyond your own abilities. But he doesn't mean to say that you can't get there, maybe you'll be lucky if Hashem gives you help. He means to say that that is the natural process. You begin something that is within human ability. You begin something that anybody who really wants to apply themselves can do, the 613 mitzvahs, with dedication, with a desire to really end up going all the way, and then Hashem will begin assisting you. But his point here is that this realm of already moving into the internal drive is already of a different nature than the initial stage of just quote unquote, it's not just at all, operating with the 613 parameters, because this is already mamish, a partnership with Hashem. Now, he says that this is something very difficult. This doesn't mean that it's very difficult in the sense that one who knows how many can do it. It means that it's difficult because it requires certain levels of exertion in terms of thinking about things, spending time to contemplate, to study, to let yourself be affected and moved, not just to do. There was one of the I forgot who it was, one of the Chachmei Hagoyim, a non-Jewish thinker, who said, people will resort to any expedient to avoid the labor of thinking. Meaning, don't tell me to sit down and really try to think something through. Give me a flurry of activity. But to sit down and have to really, really contemplate something, that's just already a little too hard. So the Chavos HaLevavos is telling us that this is this process. It's about sitting and really studying and contemplating and allowing yourself to be touched and moved by the Chesed Hashem that is in your life. And this is what will earn a person the divine assistance to indeed start developing these sensitivities, these deeper levels of appreciation. And he moves into a zone where he is mamish being moved along by Hashem. Okay, we will end with this for this week. We will end the recording and we'll unmute and we'll part.